Welcome everyone to the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School members call for the month of August 2017 and the Great American Eclipse. I like to call it the Great American Total Solar Eclipse because not everybody, you know, knows which eclipse it is unless you tell them. But there's a lot of information out there, and as Em and I were just talking about, there's sometimes some misinformation out there as well. So we're going to talk a lot about that. We'll talk about some other things as well. I'm just trying to think if we have any announcements. I know that Eric and I and Daniel and a few other people are going to be up on the eclipse line in the Oregon area. And then we're going to be going to do an event at a place called the University of Earth. It's a 3-day event. And it's getting a lot of great attention, and there's still time to join if you'd like to join us. And it's a great way to have a very experiential 3-day, journey with us through the Shamanic Astrology Mysteries, and also a night sky thing that we're going to be doing. So I think that's the main thing I can think of. Eric, can you think of anything else we need to talk about on terms of announcements?
Nothing, any burning questions other than, the Portugal event is still going on. There's still a couple of spaces left for that in September.
Oh, yeah, right.
two spaces in particular. So if you're still looking for a last-minute deal for that, then that's still available. We had to cancel the Nevada Fish Lake Valley Night Sky event, which was going to be focused on cosmology due to not enough participants and some greater expenses.
And the BLM making it difficult to get the permits we needed.
They've become exceptionally strict, and yeah. It's just the sign of the times about where we are with things. And because it's out in the middle of nowhere, certain things that need to be provided were expensive. Very costly. So
right.
The combination of those factors said, okay, the event is no longer going on.
Right.
But you can consider the River of Life event, which is not too far away from there, and take place about a week prior to that. So.
Yeah, and it should be pretty cool. I mean, I think it's going to be a fun event. So we have, as I mentioned earlier, this huge, actually a whole eclipse window that starts on August 7th and goes to August 21st. You know, it's like that window, or I like to call it the cauldron, the eclipse cauldron. And we'll be talking a lot about that. But probably before we do that, maybe we'll just do a little brief overview of what's happening with all the planets. And starting with the Mercury cycle, because it is very much connected into this eclipse. It is stationing retrograde on August 12th at 11 and a half Virgo-ish, right in there, and then it's going to go direct right at 28-25 Leo, where the eclipse is like 28-53 or something like that. I mean, it's really right in that exact space where it's going to be stationing. So we could imagine that Mercury station after the eclipse has already happened at the eclipse degree is going, and it'll be hanging out there for like a week, you know, right in that area of the sky, that it's a powerful act, a reactivation of the eclipse that's already taken place. And so that means that basically Mercury starts out as an evening star, goes retrograde as we start, go into August tomorrow, and then it will conjunct the sun while retrograde, and then we'll talk about maybe some of the dates of that happening in a moment, but it'll rise as a morning star and go direct and begin a whole new cycle in Leo. a lot around the Leo mysteries, a lot around Regulus we'll be talking about as well in connection to that. We won't see Mars all this month because it's with the sun, except it might be possible to see it during the eclipse because it's going to be about 8 degrees to the right of the sun. Do you have any more information about that, Eric?
Well, its magnitude at that time is going to be nearly 1.8, plus 1.8. So it's going to be at its It'll be at its dimmest point, you know, that we probably will ever get a chance to see, possibly in our lives, but who knows? So it's going to be faint. It'll be fainter than Regulus, but because Regulus is right next to the eclipse, it may not be visible either. So, but it's most likely we're going to be able to see Mars and certainly see Venus.
Right, and what's interesting is that in ancient times, if Venus was in the underworld and was revealed at a time of an eclipse, then that was considered like not a good thing to have happen when she's in her underworld time. So I wonder about Mars, like what does that mean, and how is that going to play out? And particularly in relationship to the sacred masculine and its underworld initiation. So that's something we might speculate on a little bit more as we go along as well. And also, just a couple of days prior to the eclipse, Venus will be moving through her next gate at the solar plexus, the place of personal power. So that should be interesting as we have this whole Leo eclipse thing going on in Venus there with that, not so close to the sun and the moon at the time of the eclipse, but might be visible once the sky darkens. You can maybe see Venus to the right, I guess it would be to the far right of the sun. So
yeah, it'll be near just below Castor and Pollux.
Right, because it's just leaving the sacred hoop around that time, or just has just left the sacred hoop around that time. So, and then we're going to have Jupiter kind of lower on the horizon. I was out last night. I saw the moon pass Jupiter and Spica, and Jupiter was pretty low. It was getting a lot lower now these days. So if you get a chance to see it, it's starting out at a minus 1.9 magnitude, but by the end of the month, it's a minus 1.7. It's also getting closer to Spica. As we start the month, it's about 8 degrees from Spica, and by the end of the month, it's about 4 degrees. So next month in September, we'll have Jupiter with Spica. That'll be pretty worth watching them get closer and closer together. And then, of course, we've had Saturn, in the Archer, also kind of passing in the lower reaches of Ophiuchus and aligned with the star Rasselhart that marks the crown chakra. And so it suggests to us that Saturn, who is also stationing direct on August 25th, is connecting to the energy of dreaming as a way to tune into how we can recreate the structure of our reality. That's kind of exciting. So those are the visible planets. Is there anything else we want to say about that before we kind of jump in?
No, we can certainly add more detail to some of these things as we go along.
Exactly. So do you want to start out talking about the eclipse, Eric?
Okay, I thought we were going to...
Well, let's start with the, I think we need to just kind of set the, because this is, that it's the main event. So we need to maybe start with the lunar eclipse on August 7th or 8th, depending on your time zone, and then, you know, just talk about the whole eclipse window.
Sure. The lunar eclipse takes place, here on the Pacific Coast, August 7th, during the full moon. It's not visible here in North America. But in other parts of the world, it will be. That takes place at 1525 Aquarius.
Yes.
So that's only 13 degrees away from the actual solar eclipse, which takes place 2 weeks later. And this is certainly the beginning of the eclipse season, and that's setting the tone, this whole Leo-Aquarius axis. Although there is certainly more energy focused on the Leo portion of the sky. in the near the Star Regulus, and you know, kind of in between this the crown and the lion in that zone. Although again, on August 21st, it really lights up a lot. There's a lot happening in between these two eclipses, the lunar and the solar eclipse, and the there's a lot of energy that's being placed on the solar eclipse for good reason. You've already talked about some of that, Kaylin. I want to mention about Mars is that in the last Mars webinar that Daniel and I did, I looked up the last times that Mars was visible, and in the underworld during a total solar eclipse. And technically, it wasn't in the underworld in 1998, but it was only 17 degrees from the sun. So it was kind of on the edge of that. It was also visible. The closest to the sun it was in 1983. Mars was only 2 degrees from the total solar eclipse, visible in Malaysia and Indonesia. It was also visible and in the underworld in 79, 76, 62, and 1959. And the last time it was, looks like none of those. Well, no, in 1979, it was visible in the northwest U.S. and the central eastern Canadian area, February 26, 1979. It was 8 degrees from the sun. So Mars was, you know, it's not common for Mars to be synchronistically close to the sun during a total solar eclipse. So it's definitely a rarer sight. And so we'll get a treat, much more rare than say Venus or Mercury, because they operate more closely with the sun than Mars does.
Absolutely.
What were you saying, Kaylin?
I was just going to say I want to back up to the lunar eclipse, but go ahead and finish with whatever you were going
to
say.
Well, no, I just wanted to share that, and I wanted just to comment that it's like, okay, so I don't have the exact dates of like when they officially begin the eclipse season, because or the center point of the eclipse season, because that can vary from year to year. So if you wanted to talk about that.
I don't have that information exact either. But I imagine, to me, the eclipse season starts with the first eclipse and ends with the second. And there's always usually at least two eclipses. Sometimes there'll be three.
Yes.
But we don't have that situation going on. But we do have this lunar eclipse, the Aquarius full moon, happening on the cross quarter. So as Eric was mentioning earlier, it's at 15 degrees Aquarius. So the sun will be at 15 degrees Leo, and that is the exact halfway point between the June solstice and the September equinox. And then the moon at 15 degrees Aquarius is the halfway point between the December solstice and the March equinox. So these halfway points are being activated at this first eclipse. And even though it's a partial lunar eclipse, we probably won't see it, it still opens a window of time, and it's happening. What's interesting is the eclipse time can feel sort of time out of time. I keep getting people telling me this for many years now, where they feel a little out of body, they feel, you know, disoriented, they, you know, things don't operate in the way that they normally expect it to during an eclipse window, from the first eclipse to the second, or the last eclipse if there happens to be three. And and that can also be an experience because it's a between place. It's between either a solstice and an equinox, or an equinox and a solstice. So here we have this first lunar eclipse between the summer solstice or the June solstice and the September equinox. So it's in that in-between time. And ancient cultures really did work with this as a between time. And they would often do divination. They would do different kinds of ways of tuning in to see what it was happening. They, especially at this Lammas or Lunasa cross-quarter point in August, was when they, before the patriarchy came in, they were celebrating the sun goddess, and they were celebrating the abundance that she would bring, because without the sun, we wouldn't have crops. We wouldn't have grains. We wouldn't have, you know, vegetables to harvest, that kind of thing. So she was very much honored. But during patriarchal times, this timing was co-opted by the sun god, also in Celtic, or the Irish called him Lu, L-U-G-H, Lu meaning light. And that's why it was called Luna Sa. And so Lu's festival focused on more masculine kinds of things, like the skills of the warrior and the craftsman, and a much less emphasis was on the grain or the bounty of the mother's gift from the solar feminine. So I think this maybe could be a turning point, that where we could see that at the cross quarter time with an eclipse, opening an eclipse window, is possible for us to have a different experience of the solar feminine expression of, you know, that we could say the February cross quarter. It was the time in the northern hemisphere, it's the time when the days are lengthening and the light is getting, you know, the days, there's more light that's available. So the solar feminine has the power to give life, and the life-giving light, and that was something that was celebrated. In bulk candle mass, you know, the light was part of the celebration that they used. So just something that we might tune into around this particular eclipse is, how do we celebrate that? How do we honor that? How do we become more aware of what that possibility is in this season, in this, not only the seasonal shift or the between, you know, solstice and equinox, but also the in this cross quarter, but also the eclipse season that begins on the cross quarter. So I hope that makes sense, and just something I was thinking about. And then the other piece I want to bring in is that it turns out that the sun is kind of in the head of the lion at the time of the cross quarter, the August cross quarter. It's near a star called Alturf. And it was at one point seen as the eye of the lion, and the Arabic word was translated as the glance of the lion's eye. And so, you know, what is our perception? What are we seeing? And how is this all being shifted and changed at this time with the, you know, the full moon in Aquarius? Aquarius has a lot to do with awareness and perception as well. And so the sun doesn't actually get there exact until August 10th, but just something else to tune into at the time of the full moon on the cross quarter point. So I think that's all I have to say about the lunar eclipse. Is there anything you wanted to add?
No, that's great. It's obviously, if people have anything going on in their personal charts that is around the cross-quarter points and the signs of self-interest, then this will definitely be a personal activation point for you.
And for those of you who don't know what the signs of self-interest are, it of course, Leo and Aquarius we've been talking about, but also Scorpio and Taurus, and they have to do with not selfish, but interest in the self or self-exploration, or how we understand more about who we are through that journey of, you know, the interest in self, not always just about taking care of others. So I happen to be 15 degrees Scorpio rising, so I always love the cross quarter for the Taurus-Scorpio axis. Personally, that's just something I tune into as well. But this is pretty exciting for the Leo Aquarius axis.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So and then for some people that's going to take place on the 8th, depending on where you live in the world.
Right. For the lunar eclipse, it's exact at 11:11 a.m. Pacific time. So if you're in Europe, it's going to be the next day, most likely, or really late that night on the 7th.
Right. Or if you were like in parts of Asia,
right,
South Pacific, it'll definitely be the next day.
Right.
Shall we
So
talk about
then,
the solar eclipse more now?
yes, I think so, because they kind of go together.
Yeah, exactly. Why don't you
Well,
begin?
I can totally begin. So one of the things I just want to mention for those on that are listening to this call is that Daniel and I did an eclipse, a thing on this whole sorrow cycle and what this eclipse is about and so on. I think we did that in earlier this year. I don't remember the exact month we did it, but it's still available. If you haven't heard it, you might want to get it and listen to it. If you have, you might want to go back and listen to it again, because some of the things I'm going to briefly mention now, we go into a lot of depth there. So this eclipse cycle is actually a Saros 145, I think it's Saros 145. And so eclipses happen in series. And I'm not exactly 100% sure how to describe the Saros cycle. Do you know, Eric?
The which star?
The Saros that this eclipse is happening in.
Oh, the
It's a
Saros.
series. Yeah. It's a series that started in the 1600s.
Yeah.
1639. Yeah.
So you want me to check the? I looked up the Saros number.
It's 145. I know that. It's
Yes.
just that, yeah. So somehow it's like a whole series of cycles that lasts for really a couple thousand years or more. It's like a long
Right.
time. And it started in 1639. The first annular eclipse was in 1891. There was a hybrid event in 1909. Then the first total eclipse was in June of 1927. And then this Saros will last until September of 2648. So it lasts for a long time, and there's 77 eclipses that are included in this Saros cycle. So the longest eclipse in the cycle will be June 25th of 2522. And it's going to have a duration of 7 minutes and 12 seconds. This one only has a couple of minutes, 2 to 3 minutes.
Seven
I know, isn't that crazy? So anyway, so we're in a series. Now, what's interesting about this particular series is that in 1920, let's see, 1909, I think President Taft had died or something happened to he there was an attempted assassination of him. And then in 1945, Franklin Delano Roosevelt died. In 1963, President Kennedy was assassinated, and these are all years, every 18 years or so, that this Saros is activated. In 1981, there was an attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan. In 1999, President Bill Clinton was impeached. So now we're here in 2017. What's going to happen? We don't know. Also, in 1945, we had the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And these eclipses, this Saros has been seen as one that really creates dramatic events, especially in the U.S., apparently, with our president. And interestingly, of course, this eclipse is affecting our president's chart, because he is 26 degrees Mars in Leo, almost 27, and he's 29 degrees Leo rising. So this eclipse is happening right in the middle of those two things on his chart. So he's personally on the front lines with us. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Oh yeah, Trump's natal ascendant and Mars are only 1 or 2 degrees, depending on in the orb of the solar eclipse in Leo. And so yeah, that's a he's the center of the target point of that eclipse.
Right, and when we look at the pattern of what's happened to past presidents in this sorrow cycle, it would suggest that something's going to happen. We don't know what will happen, but something will probably happen. And it doesn't usually happen on the day of the eclipse, or even within a week or a month of the eclipse. Oftentimes it can be 3 to 6 months later to a year later. So, you know, but something gets activated by the eclipse energy. And the other thing I wanted to say is this is number 22. So that we, you know, we have these master numbers. There are 77 eclipses in this sorrow cycle, and this is number 22. That seems interesting, just to note as well.
Yeah, did you describe what a Saros is already?
Well, I just said it's a series of eclipses, and I don't. If you have the exact definition, go ahead.
Yeah, it's defined by the synodic days of the moon cycle, and so calculated in lunar months up to a point of 18.03 years will give you one Saros to the next, or one Saros event to the next Saros eclipse event. So the last time there was a this eclipse event was in, you mentioned 1999, yeah, August 11th, 1999, Saros 145 here. And so if you were to calculate the synodic, you know, 29 and a half days for the lunar cycle, and you just keep going until you get to, you know, and it forms roughly all the way back around, you know, when concerning the nodes, of course, and the moon itself, back around to where it was, that's 18.03 years. So that's the nearest whole number there, or we just say 18, which is the nearest whole number. So that defines the Saros, and it's different from the, you know, a Metonic return, which is about, 19 years. So we don't want to get confused. And I think you talk a lot about, I think you and Daniel talk a lot about that during the
class that we did. Yes, we did.
Yeah.
About that, yeah.
So that's something. There's various resources available. Guy Otwell's got a great publication about the understanding of eclipses, and he talks about this specific eclipse in his book, aforementioned title. There's also certainly resources on Sky and Telescope and other sites that you can look up, from astronomers and. Talk about Saros, and I'm sure other researchers that have done that. And we're going to have more resources available on our website. Kaylin and I had a brief discussion about that, which we will be posting more in the coming days.
And currently there's a video that was done by Dale O'Brien, who's an astrologer in Eugene, Oregon, not far from you, Eric, and he did a lot of history of eclipses that crossed the United States, and one in 1811, there was a huge earthquake that happened 3 months later, and then, of course, the War of 1812, a year later, you know, 6 months after that eclipse, so, you know, big things that were shifting, and that earthquake created a 16-mile lake in the New Madrid area, and this eclipse, and then there'll be another eclipse in 2024, crosses, the two eclipses will cross that area. So he was saying maybe something will happen there again. He didn't know. But he also looked at the 1918 eclipse and that crossed the U.S. and the last time it crossed the U.S. And that was when the Spanish influenza broke out, and it affected young people ages 20 to 25. Many died from that. And it was also kind of the end of the time around the end of World War One, but also just as the U.S. was getting into World War One, was when this influenza broke out. And because the young people that were fighting the war got it, and then they infected each other, and then it just increased the death toll around that. So that was one of the things that happened around that time.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's not forget about for those of you that might be have this knowledge or not, that these kinds of alignments, full moons and new moons in particular, but also obviously eclipses, which are super new moons and super full moons, have a major gravitational effect on the Earth, not just in the tides, but and some research has known this for decades now, that it does influence the fault lines of the Earth, you know, creating more possibilities, more potential energy for the Earth to actually move. And Kaylin mentioned the New Madrid quake, the powerful New Madrid quake that happened in 1812, which was, or 1811, which created a lake and reversed the course of the Mississippi River. Now, we're not saying that the eclipse this year is going to do anything like that, but you just be on, this is just a really tense time, and we're, you know, all life on this planet requires water to live, and we're, you know, water is greatly affected by gravity, and during eclipses, you know, regardless of whether we're personally affected on an astrological level, we're going to be affected, period, no matter what. And so just to be aware of that. And speaking of affected, the U.S.'s natal chart, which has Aquarius moon at about 27 degrees, is obviously also going to be personally affected as a nation with the total solar eclipse only, you know, almost exactly opposite. And so this creates another opportunity for us to look back and to realize, you know, what kind of idealism we had when we founded this country, what did our ancestors do, what were they trying, what was their intent, and the opportunity to start and create into move into a new level of what we want to manifest in this world in a healthy way, rather than trying to recapture some kind of illusionary golden age of the United States that may or may not have actually existed, depending on a person's perception. And so we're here now to create something really powerful, and we can utilize this energy to do that for ourselves as a collective, as a community, as a global community, but, you know, even, you know, to start with, as a community here in the United States and in North America. To begin fresh, to begin anew, without you know, trying to capture something that may or may not have worked. And if we live in a new age, and we have to adapt and create a new operating manual for us. But with the Leo Aquarius axis, this is about creating a new vision for ourselves and breaking through barriers that may have hindered us. You know, thinking in revolutionary terms, but in a way that you know, it's more universal rather than something limited by the needs or wants of the few, from some personal egoic standpoint, and rather instead to do it on a greater collective level. You know, where we're really embracing radical radiant self love and beginning fresh, and we have this opportunity, this choice. And of course, we talked about Donald Trump being the center point of this and being the figurehead of the government and what could take place. This is going to be an intense time for the country. But as Kaylin said, you know, we're not going to really understand or at least feel the effects of this for several weeks or months after the eclipse completes on the 21st of August. And so, by that time, you know, we'll start to realize what is going on.
There's a couple of things that come to mind as you're speaking, Eric. One is because a total solar eclipse is a new moon. So it's the ending of a lunar cycle and the beginning of a new lunar cycle. But this is an eclipse, so it's also, you know, it's a bigger ending and beginning. So that's really what eclipses represent, and the path of totality, and it's around the path of totality where these major events usually happen. This is something that as Eric was saying, astronomers and science is now starting to affirm. There was there's been some books that have been written. Was it J.B. Zurcher that you were talking about earlier? In 1984, he wrote a book called Total Eclipses of the Sun. And he, you know, so they started noticing how there's this pattern that happens within sometime around an eclipse time that major events take place. So what's needed, you know, and we can imagine that if we're in a place of keeping our awareness expanded and open, you know, in that place of self-love, knowing we're divine and that everything is happening in alignment with some divine plan that maybe we don't understand, then that there's something that will end and there's something that will begin as a result of this eclipse.
Absolutely. So, you know, this is, this starts a whole new 18-year process and, you know, completes in 2035. I just wanted to point out, you brought up Clinton's impeachment in 1999. At least one governmental body impeached him, the other one didn't.
Yes.
But the eclipse that took place on August 11, 1999, Bill Clinton was personally affected by that.
Yeah.
He had a 26-degree natal sun, Leo, 7-degree natal Mercury in Leo, and then Pluto was at 11 degrees Leo, or 12 degrees. And the eclipse, you know, at about 18 degrees Leo, he was in the range of that eclipse. And so... It's just really interesting that this president and the last president, I'd have to look up to see what other presidents were personally affected by.
Yeah.
And the
that would be worth doing too, actually.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah. Right.
So there's something to be said about it. And, you know, just a piece of important trivia for all of you to take in.
Absolutely. And that, you know, what we're holding in consciousness and how we're working with this is, you know, part of what's added to the collective energies of this time. So staying in a place as much as possible of not getting too triggered and activated in reactive ways, but more responsive ways is a good way to work with this. Now, something else just to keep in mind is that Mercury is going to go retrograde after the first eclipse, so in the eclipse window, and then it will go direct again in the eclipse degree of the total solar eclipse. So
yes.
That could accelerate whatever the eclipse effect is, because that's one of the things that has been noticed is that whenever a planet crosses the degree of the eclipse, especially soon after, it magnifies that effect. So we've got that going on too. And of course, a Mercury retrograde can feel like an in-between time or, you know, not a normal time in terms of how we think logically, rationally, you know, what makes sense, what doesn't make sense. All of that can be affected during a Mercury retrograde. So we've got that going on in conjunction with this eclipse window.
Yeah, Mercury stays retrograde until it goes direct on September 5th. For those of you who are trying to follow along here.
Right. Yeah, I think we mentioned that earlier, but it's good to mention it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So shall we talk about the other stories of the month?
Sure. I think it's probably time. But hey, again, main feature we just gave you a lot of information about, and I highly recommend people watch that video if you're interested in more of the historic
yes.
aspects. And also just to say that many, many cultures saw eclipses as quote unquote bad, you know, that evil or, you know, but the reason that was is because it was often ending something that it kind of freaked them out. So, but this could be a good thing. I mean, we definitely need some things to end in terms of how we've been doing things. So not necessarily bad. It's just all in our perception, how we look at it.
Right. Right. So, you know, going back to the beginning of the month, aside from the lunar eclipse that takes place on the 7th, we have, you know, on August 2nd, Uranus going retrograde at 2831 Aries. What's interesting about Uranus, I only bring this up because I was curious about it, and I usually don't bring up this particular thing, and Daniel and you don't talk about it much either, but Aries is, as we know, been hanging around Aries for many, 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 many years, and it's in the 23 degree, almost 24 degrees Aries, and so it's essentially in a window of conjunction with Uranus, and so Uranus is standing still this month, essentially not moving at all, hardly moving at all. And as it goes retrograde coming to a point where it's going to be retrograde for a few months, but it starts off really slow, beginning on August 2nd. Chaos and discord from Eris, and then Uranus is also a planet that can summon up, if you will, chaos, but with purpose. There's a purpose behind it, to break through barriers, to create new opportunities, to rocket ourselves faster down our path in life. And sometimes if we get stuck, Uranus is the planet that is the most known for helping us getting unstuck in life.
Yes. Yes, and something to note also, that as you're saying that, Eric, as I'm realizing, because Uranus is at 28-31 Aries when it's going, it's in the degrees, not the sign, but it's in a trine to the eclipse degrees.
It is.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, right? So, it may be adding its little flavor to the whole thing. Of disruptive energy that, can create something new so that we can have expanded perception, blah, blah, blah. All of that.
Definitely. August 3rd, the moon is in conjunction with Saturn, and Saturn is sort of sitting between the Scorpion. It's kind of, I guess you would say, it might be aligned with the Scorpion's tail right now, but
right.
The Scorpion and the Archer. And it's very prominent in the southern sky. When you're facing the south, it's the brightest one out there, and Ceres is fairly nearby, and you can see it, but it's obviously different colors, and it's easy to point. It's easy to pick out, where Antares is more of a reddish orange, and Saturn is more of a yellow white in color. But Saturn doesn't move very much at all either this month. In fact, it starts out at 21:34 Sagittarius, and ends the month at 21:13. So really, only 20 minutes. A third of a degree it moves this month, because it's going to go direct near the end of the month. But whenever the moon hits a planet, it becomes a marker, like on the clock. It can hit a point in the sky, which helps you point out, a planet or a star. But it also acts as an activation point around the Sagittarius mystery school and what Saturn brings to it around truth. And that's something that you and I have talked about, Daniel's talked about in great detail around what Saturn and Sagittarius is all about. And Trump is actually in a Saturn cycle around his moon, and his Gemini sun. And
yeah.
So he's really personally at the effect of this particular cycle. And so the moon can be an activation point here for him as well.
What Saturn is really asking for him to do is to step up, take responsibility, and do things in a different way.
Absolutely.
Than he's done it before. And the more he persists in the ways that he's done it, the more challenging it's going to be. And we can see that has been actually happening for him this year.
Yeah, and it's like not a day goes by when something dramatic happens, like the communications director has only been there for 11 days and suddenly ousted.
Gone. Right?
He's gone. I've never seen so many changes in the beginning of a presidency as I've seen in Donald Trump, as long as I've been alive anyway.
Right.
So, accountability. Kaylin talked about the responsibility. This is really huge. I mean, if you are sidestepping accountability and responsibility and you're in a Saturn cycle, a powerful one, then you're going to be having a bad time.
Right.
It won't be fun. It will be the antithesis of fun.
Well, and following up on that, Eric, on August 4th, we're going to have Jupiter square Pluto at 17
yes.
Libra, and that is exactly on DT's Jupiter. So he's in a Pluto cycle right now. Yeah. And so it's like, and this is all leading up to the eclipse that's also on, right on his chart. So he's like really under the gun in so many ways.
He is. And that, You just hit it. I mean, this is this starts actually a whole area this month. One of the big themes this month is that Jupiter and Pluto are going to be essentially in a relatively tight square this whole month. And then Venus comes in for a few days just before the eclipse in the third week of August, and in the 16 to 20 degree range of the so-called cardinal signs, which are householder signs in shamanic astrology or culture bearer signs, Aries, Libra, Cancer, and Capricorn are all going to be activated in this area with Pluto and Jupiter being the big ones, and then Venus coming around, and also the Moon in conjunction with Venus later in the month. And so this August 4th starts out this whole process.
Yeah, it sure does. Well, actually, August 3rd, when the Moon and Saturn activate, 45.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, for 45.
In
sure.
Syros 145. I just think that's interesting.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You know.
Right? Oh, God. Anyway. So
there are no coincidences.
Right, there are none. Exactly. So where do we want to go to next from here?
Well, August 12th, we have Mercury retrograde, which I think you mentioned mm-hmm. before, but I'm just recapping that.
Right.
I talked about the August 14th through the 16th, there is the T-square. This is the sort of the center point of the T-square between Venus, Pluto, and Jupiter in Cancer, Capricorn, and Libra. Did you want to talk more about that? I mean, I talked some already, but...
Right. Well, just to add to that piece is that it is, I think, on the 18th when Venus goes through the next gate.
Yes.
In her journey into the underworld when the Moon catches up to Venus. And so that's at the solar plexus, you know, the place of personal power. And, you know, the idea is that it's releasing the distortions that are connected to how it's about having power over others, or it's not standing in our power, either one. And so to have that going on collectively as well at this, as we're, you know, approaching the second eclipse, it feels really powerful.
Yeah, I think that's an important piece in this solar eclipse story. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a sign, and certainly it'll be when Venus becomes visible in the morning and afternoon hours, depending on where you live in the United States, during the solar eclipse. This is
just a few days later. Yeah.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Amazing. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Venus will then square Uranus on the 24th of August, Venus at 28 Cancer and Uranus at 28 Aries. So that's activating that piece of the whole sort of bigger thing that we've been talking about. And also, again, in the degrees, 28 degrees being 28 Leo where the eclipse is happening, 28 Cancer, 28 Aries, I mean... It seems significant that this is, you know, part of what's going on as well in terms of just bringing our attention more fully to that. And then the next day, Venus will go into Leo herself and be there and crossing the eclipse degrees in September and catching up, you know, activating all of that as she goes through her process.
Yeah, and you know, keeping in mind that Mars also begins to activate that area too at the very tail end of August, the eclipse degrees, and in the beginning of September, and it's everything is like, you know, it's a huge nexus point for all of these planets.
Right.
And, you know, whenever you've got that much energy going into this one, funneling into this one point, it means something significant is taking place. There's a major intent here for a major shift to that needs to move forward. And, you know, for those who are resisting their own personal shift, their own authenticity, this is when trouble could start for people in their lives if they are resisting their own path. And you know, the universe is doing everything in their power or in its power to help us, to assist
yes.
us in becoming our truer selves. And if we, you know, resist even our own tug, you know, we're just doing a disservice to ourselves. There are a lot of writers in the Jungian thought and even in self-help books that write about this particular area and use different words for it, but the point is the same. It's like we're supposed to be in our own flow, but also in some regards in flow with the universe. And that's part of our training in this, as our soul learns to live with a new story. It wants to grow. It wants to discover who this person is, and that's what we're here to do, and play a role in this world. Maybe some of our roles are just to sit back and watch. In some respects, there are people that's their role, but others are, you know, fully participating in this situation. And we all have our, you know, we can only give ourselves, you know, but we give ourselves the power to be. There's a Cherokee saying around that, a Cherokee proverb, and it rings true all the time. No less in this month, no less during this eclipse and these alignments that take place.
I would say that this month is probably in many ways the most important month of 2017, and you know what's happening with all of this. And another thought that's occurring to me, because at the end of the month, August 31st, you know, retrograde Mercury is going to return to Leo. It's passing Regulus, and so it goes from zero Virgo to 29 Leo at that particular time. And Regulus, as the heart of the lion, as the the Sphinx in the sky, so to speak, and the Sphinx being the keeper of the Hall of Records. And if we look at the Hall of Records as being in our DNA, what's being activated, and how can we hold intention and consciousness around getting more in touch with what it is we know that's already encoded into us, and that this eclipse is activating to bring forth into our reality so that we can change our world in perhaps ways we're not even able to imagine right now, because it's, seemingly kind of difficult. At least I find myself being challenged at times, or getting caught up in the dramas that can be going on. So how do we stay in this place of the greater vision from a heart space, and trusting that heart knowing, trusting that we're being guided from our hearts, and that what we can imagine, what we can hold on to, and what we can feel is what's going to be accelerated and amplified this month in many different ways, not just the eclipse, but the eclipse is the major theme, the major sort of demarcation of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I like that imagery. There's a great, there's several passages in one of Dane Rajar's books called The Pulse of Life. It's about the 12 signs. And in the area, and he starts from Aries and he goes all the way to Pisces, but in the area where it's the transition between Leo and Virgo, he spends a great deal of time in regards to the Sphinx and how it is this symbol that not only represents that on a physical level looks like what the Lion constellation looks like, but has a connection to, you know, the mystery, the sacred mysteries of the world, or the sacred mysteries of life and the complexities. And that, you know, starts moving into the area of Virgo, and how that embodiment of the Sphinx can combine both the mysteries of Leo and Virgo into its energy, into whatever is contained in there. The Sphinx is universally known as mysteries and riddles, and there's good reason for it. And I think that if you look at this and you're looking at the sky and you're looking at the Leo, you could be essentially looking at a projection that has some tangibility on it in regards to the Sphinx in Egypt. That is not just a symbol for Egypt, but a symbol for humanity.
Yeah, beautiful. It brings to mind that saying that man fears time, but time fears the Sphinx, or sometimes it said time fears the pyramids. And that idea that we can change our timeline, how we are experiencing this reality. And because this eclipse is so connected to the heart of the lion, to that aspect of the, how we create our timelines and how we're creating our consciousness and awareness and how we're living from our hearts, all of that feels very significant to be tuned into. And what is it that we're creating as we go forward? How can we also, because, if eclipse is a time out of time, if Mercury retrograde can feel like a time out of time, if we can step out of time to create something or to, tune into and feel into what's possible at this time. Ha ha, there's the word time again. Anyway, you get the idea that, wow, This again is a turning point. It's like when I wrote the Celestial Timings, I said it's a game changer. It's a radical game changer. So, we have this opportunity to radically change the game of how we're experiencing life personally, but also collectively. So that's our opportunity.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to share just a bit, a couple other things. Is that the T-square with Venus, Pluto, and Jupiter, and the area that it is, the degrees between 16 and 20 roughly, that's only a couple of degrees away from that 13 to 14 degree area of the Grand Cross that took place in the same signs back in 2014. So that area of the sky is still, those areas of the sky are still being activated, they're still being triggered. And we're still in that zone, and so that's just something to be aware of as we're going through this month, as time elapses day by day, and we experience this month, and then we get to the eclipse and beyond.
Beautiful. So I think we need to open it up for questions here soon. Is there anything else?
Saturn goes direct on August 25th at 21 degrees 10 minutes, Sagittarius. There are a second moon Saturn conjunction on August 30th, and Mercury enters Leo on August 31st. So I think we covered, I just wanted to share that just because I wanted to cover the other important.
To the end of the month, right. Got it.
Yes.
Yes, we had mentioned some of that, but it's good to reiterate that as we go to the end of the month. So I'm going to go ahead and start the Q&A. And if you press *6, it will put you in the queue. And if you have questions, comments, ahas, insights, anything you want to share about anything we've been talking about here, we'd love to hear from you. And if not, oh, awesome. Here we go. Nancy?
Hey. So wonderful class. Always so much. Just so much going on this month is mind boggling. But my question is, so this Saros cycle has been repeating, and you gave the examples in 1909, 1945, 63, 81, etc. And in each of those time periods, the leader of our nation was threatened in some kind of way, or died, actually killed. Yeah.
Right.
So my question is, okay, so is the proximity of the eclipse to Regulus? Because you think about, the leader of the lion, the heart of the lion and the leader of the nation kind of being the same. So does the eclipse in each of those cycles take place near Regulus?
That's a good question, and I'm not sure. Eric, do you know?
Well, yeah, the eclipse is right on the edge of, Or Regulus is right on the edge of the eclipse.
But you're talking about previous eclipses.
Oh, well, I did look at the last one in 1999, and the eclipse took place about 12 degrees, 11 to 12 degrees away from Regulus. It took place around 18 and a half degrees Leo.
Okay.
So Regulus in 1999 was at 29 Leo. It hadn't moved into Virgo at that time.
But, so then 1981, it was in July. The eclipse was like the 31st of July. So it was would have been a lot earlier, Leo. So it wouldn't have been with Regulus.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So because the Ceres cycle isn't exactly, I think you were saying, like the lunar node cycle. It's not like a lunar return a nodal return so that it's going to be on the same degree necessarily.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Awesome.
All right.
Great question.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. Who's this?
Hi, Emma.
Oh, awesome. Hi, Emma.
Yeah. Hey, thank you very much. It was a fantastic recording, and I'm going to have to re-listen to this again. I have something very interesting to share that I didn't realize until I pulled up a bi-wheel and put my chart in the center and the eclipse charts in here. I'm in a nodal reversal right now.
Ah.
And the day of the lunar eclipse, I know it is 2 degrees difference than the lunar eclipse. But on the day of the solar eclipse, it's narrowed down to 1 degree, so it's nearly exact on that a nodal reversal. And it's just mind-blowing, because when I stop and think of what I've been going through in these last, 6 months, I have been reprogramming, repatterning my whole life.
Beautiful.
It's been amazing. So anyway, I just wanted to share that
well,
it is something
so
we can work with.
Yes, absolutely. That's the whole point. And that I think the people that are afraid of change, the people that are, it's like maybe they like things the way they are and they don't want them to change, or maybe they don't like them but they still don't want them to change. Are trying to hold on, and then the events get more and more intense to get them to change. So when we're working with it, we often find that it's not as horrible as we might imagine, or, some people go through, or that kind of thing. It's when we're in resistance to it is when it's more challenging.
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing, is don't fight it, enjoy it, get yourself on the journey.
Wise words.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Emma. We have one more person here. I think this might be Gail.
Hello.
Hi.
Finally made it on a call.
Yay.
Enjoying your discussion of everything and the solar eclipses and your positive reminders to, we all get what we focus on, or, perspective. We know that things are going to change. The thing with Donald feeling pressured and his rating slipping, that he may start war with Iran. There's a lot of discussion about that. But whatever is going on specifically on the day of the eclipse, I think we'll come back to bite him big time. It doesn't happen right away, really. Sometimes it doesn't happen right away as much as we'd like it to. But
instant karma, right?
Yeah, no. But it'd be interesting to see exactly what's going on that day and how it'll come back to bite him really, really big time later on. So.
Thank you.
I loved your positive outlooks and reminders for us tonight. Thank you very much. And shout out, you know, always a shout out about that new book, everybody. Get on board in The Origins of Shamanic Astrology Paradigm. And it's an excellent book for this. It has great discussion of the masculine and feminine in it.
Yes, thank you. And it's available on the Shamanic Astrology website, so you can go check it out.
It is in the header. If you have to forward those pictures on the header and click on the picture, or that's where it is.
Yeah, in the slideshow, yeah. It's also in products, I'm pretty sure, as well.
No,
so.
It's not in products. It's just available on that header.
Or store.
So I just want, that's why I wanted to make a mention of it, because I was on there looking when I first got on the call, and I just wanted people to know that if they scroll through those pictures on the top there, they'll find out the information about the Origins of the Shamanic Astrology Paradigm book, a new book out.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for mentioning that.
We're looking forward to seeing some reviews. Hoping people will write reviews.
Right.
I'd love to see them.
Awesome. Thank you, Gail.
Thank you.
So, Eric, do we want to take one more, or do we want to end the session? Somebody just jumped in.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to share that Ronald Reagan was also personally affected by the eclipse as well, in 1981.
Right.
His natal moon was in 13 degrees Taurus and natal Jupiter 13 Scorpio, and the eclipse took place almost at 8 degrees Leo, 1981.
Aha. There we go. Another confirmation.
Yes. But we can take quick call.
Okay, sure. One more. Hello.
Okay. It's me again. Thank you, Gail. I ordered the book. I have it. I'm just finishing the last 10 pages. I will write you a review. Everybody needs it.
Thank you, Emma.
Okay.
All right. And one more person. Here we go. Hello.
Hi, Kaylin and Eric. It's Mary. Thank you so much. It's been a very exciting, most exciting review for this next month. I guess the one thing that really jumps out at me is because both the masculine and feminine seem to be very involved in this eclipse, that the shift from the patriarchal hold that's been going on for so many thousands of years, it seems like it could be a big step forward in shaking that down, especially with Venus coming into her power the way that she is in Leo. And that wasn't really mentioned too much, but I mean, that's what's been the big game going on for a very long time. I didn't think it would hurt to really reimagine into that and connect into that, into a world without that, and how that Gylantean kind of a culture where everybody is participating at not just their own level, but at their own sex and gender in an equal way is maybe coming closer to us than we could even hope for.
That's an awesome insight, Mary. Thank you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, great. I think so. We're complete with the call. I would just say goodbye to everyone and wish you all a great month and eclipse experience and whatever else is going on for you. So bye, everybody, and till we meet again.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.